6 minutes past 11 on the 9 till noon show, the third and final hour of the programme. Now, we managed to go the first 2 hours of the show without too much election talk, but let's dive right back into election coverage. We may have wrapped the local election count in Donegal, but the European count is really only just starting to gather momentum. The fourth count is now underway and we're starting to get clearer indications of what may happen in Midlands Northwest. Let's say we can go to the TF Royal in Castlebar and say good morning to an old friend of ours, Barry White. Barry, how are you?
Hey, Donal. How are you? Good to speak to you.
Very well indeed. You too. Barry, we're getting a clearer picture as to how Midlands Northwest is going to shape up, I think, are we?
Yeah, look, they're at count four now, so count three ended last night. It was around, well, actually, early hours of this morning. It was about 1:30. So now they're distributing the votes of Margaret Maguire, around 3,284 votes to be distributed there. But I'll just run through, Donal, I suppose, after count three, where we're at. Dakota, 113,325. And then we have Luke Ming Flanagan is sitting on 78,551. Fianna Fáil's Barry Cowan, 74,041. Nina Carberry, 74,110. Actually, she's in second place now, just ahead of Barry Cowan. Maria Walsh, 71,693. Kieran Mullooly, Independent Ireland, 57,530. So that's the top five. I think those top five who've got the first preferences will probably take the seats here, Donal. Because then, after Kieran Mullooly, you're going to Michelle Gildernew of Sinn Féin. She's sitting on almost 46,000 votes. So she's 11,500 votes behind, I suppose, covering these elections, so many of them now. That's quite a sizable gap to make up, and I don't think I've ever seen a gap that large being closed before. After that, you've Lisa Chambers in 44,183, Patter Tabine, 41,018, Niall Blaney's Fianna Fáil, 30,439, and then Chris McManus is sitting in 10th place. The sitting Sinn Féin MEP for the constituency is only sitting on 29,527. I was getting the calculator out last night, Donal, and even if 80% of that 29,000 of Chris McManus's would go to Michelle Gildernew, it still might not be enough. Kieran Mullooly is going to be transfer friendly. Yeah. From the limited tallies that we had over the last couple of days, he was definitely transfer friendly, and I think he will pick up a lot of transfers. And I think if Patter Tabine happened to go out before him, or probably will go out before him, then a lot of Patter Tabine's transfers will go to Kieran Mullooly as well. So I think the top five look almost certain at this stage. I don't think anybody's going to make Dakota, so we could be here to, I don't know, tomorrow night, maybe Thursday before we have the final result. But I think the focus now is going to be on kind of the headlines from this. Yeah. And I think the main headline is that Sinn Féin are not going to get a seat here. And like I was looking at an opinion poll from last year. Sinn Féin were on 40% in Midlands Northwest last year.
Sinn Féin,
someone had said
they
to me that they were going to take.
Yeah,
they and if someone had told me they would take no seats, I think my jaw would have hit the floor. Yeah.
In terms of Fianna Fáil, I mean, if you look, and I was just looking at the figures, if you look at Lisa Chambers and Niall Blaney combined, at this point they have 78,000 between the two of them. Was Fianna Fáil wrong to run three?
I think so, yeah. I'm just looking here at the percentages, Donal. So, like, you've Barry Cowan has 11% of first preference votes. Lisa Chambers, 6.5%. Niall Blaney, 4.5%. So, they almost got 22% between the three of them. So, I would say Lisa Chambers would be not very happy after the first preferences came out last night, because she's probably thinking, if we had a went with that two-candidate strategy, which she kept saying throughout the campaign, she thought there should have been a two-candidate strategy, not a three-candidate strategy. She probably could have took that fifth seat instead of Kieran Mullooly. People might be talking about, well, Sinn Féin got their strategy wrong, but Fianna Fáil definitely got their strategy wrong here as well.
It would be absolutely wrong to say, well, if Niall Blaney weren't there, everyone that voted for Niall Blaney would be voting for Lisa Chambers instead. Now, it would be absolutely, you could not say that.
It wouldn't be wrong.
But in terms of it does raise the question, had they just gone with the two, it would have been an interesting one. The other Donegal interest, I suppose, is Peter Casey, who's based up here. He hasn't really shown at all.
I think he's on about 3%, 21,102 first preference votes. His vote's way down there. Around 5 years ago, I think he was close to maybe 40,000 first preference votes 5 years ago. So, yeah, not a good showing by him. he didn't really feature much even in the campaign. I know he appeared in a few debates, but he didn't really feature, and I don't think even many people were giving him a chance. But yeah, that's kind of the talking points. And even the Fine Gael here, I think I was chatting to Maria Walsh last night, don't know, and even she said that they have performed way above than they could ever have expected. Like Nina Carberry and Maria Walsh have gained over 140,000 first preference votes. Both look safe. Mm-hmm. Nina Carberry, I think there was a few gasps when we heard, you know, what she gained last night. She got 73,888 first preference votes. And to think this is someone who barely did any interviews during the campaign. She didn't take part in any debates. She wasn't even here yesterday. And she hasn't been here at the council at all.
I mean, I don't recall seeing any statements from Nina Carberry come across our emails or come across the desk in the newsroom here. I don't recall seeing anything with Nina Carberry.
Maria Walsh was firing out
statements every day all the way through the campaign. She's always been very active in that regard. I don't recall seeing a single statement from Nina Carberry.
No, I don't think there was. And I think it just shows that the kind of when you endorse a celebrity candidate and you're a recognisable name, it does work in European elections. We've seen it before. And, you know, she is a former famous jockey. She won Dancing with the Stars before. Very recognisable face. Absolutely. It'll be interesting to see if she turns up here, because it'll be probably her first interview when she comes here.
Yeah. And the issue of the well-known face, I mean, Kieran Mullooly, and I suspect that's what's really going to stand him in good stead. A lot of people will be, oh, that's your man from the telly. I'll give him my number two. I always liked him when he was on the telly. And people did like Kieran Mullooly. He was a very personable reporter when he was on TV, and that's standing him in good stead now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's kind of ironic that Kieran Mullooly was complaining that he wasn't on the RTE debates, because at the same time, it's because he was on RTE for 20 years, it's because he's so recognisable. But yeah, I think he ran a good campaign. He didn't really focus on immigration. He tried to be more positive. He kind of concentrated on farming and community issues. And he was kind of being coy last night. He still wouldn't be really annoyed with Michelle Gildernew. But I think he's going to be safe, given that he could take so many transfers. But regarding the final result, Donald, I think maybe...
I'd be positive tomorrow.
Thursday, maybe. I know there's a sold out gig here on Friday night on the TFI, so it has to be before Friday. Yeah. But I don't know. For me, like, I've been here now, I'm losing track of time. It's just I don't understand why it takes so long. I was reading the Brussels Times last night, and it's almost like Ireland's the laughingstock of Europe. Every other EU country now has their results. There's groupings within the European Parliament who are now meeting, and yet we've only one MEP selected.
Yeah.
And like the ballot paper here in Midlands Northwest was 72 centimetres long.
Oh, I know.
Which just made it difficult.
It
made counting difficult. And I don't know, maybe do we have to look at, is PR the right way to do European elections? There has to be a way to speed it up, because I even find now when we have the first count, and when it looks like the five seats are almost certain, people start to lose interest as well. By the time the final results comes in, people will probably be concentrated on the next general election.
How many people are actually there at the count centre at the moment? Because when I was at the Finn Valley count centre on Sunday, and it was buzzing. And, you know, Aura was buzzing all day Saturday and all day Sunday. It was noticeable there was one recount in Aura yesterday, and at one stage, all you could see was the counters, the media, and a couple of kids kicking a ball around in the middle of the room. I mean, is it something similar where you are at the moment?
It's been very quiet. It's probably, like, I remember 5 years ago here, there was a bit of a buzz, because from the get-go 5 years ago, you had most of the candidates here. It was fairly busy. You had a lot of tally people here. But for the European count, there's been hardly any tally men. It's the first European election where there's basically been no tallies in each county. Yeah. It was very hard to gauge, you know, who was going to win the seat.
Yeah, and
like
there was
yesterday,
a fairly comprehensive European tally done in Donegal, actually, I believe. I mean, I think when the Donegal tally
may have been the most comprehensive. Maybe, I think Donegal, Sligo, Leitrim, I got tallies for. I got Galway, Mayo, and I got Westmeath.
Yeah.
So you kind of got partial tallies, but then at the same time, there was no tallies for Louth, Meath, Kildare, which is a third of the population of the constituency. Yeah. So you could have had someone who could do well in those three counties, who could be suddenly catapulted into the race. But I think yesterday it became clear when they were counting the votes, because now when they shelved the stacks of ballot papers at the back and separating for each candidate, I remember 5 years ago, the returning officer told me that each shelf has 15,000 votes. until yesterday I was zooming in the camera and I started to, you know, get the calculator out, and I was actually quite close before the first count was announced, so I kind of knew what the top five was going to be, and it did look like Kieran Mullooly was about 15,000 votes clear of Pádraig Sabine or Michelle Gildenew, and he was 11,000 votes ahead. So, yeah, so it looks pretty clear at this stage.
At this stage, Barry, we can then confidently, you believe, predict that the five MEPs that will eventually return to Europe from Midlands Northwest are going to be Luke Ming Flanagan, Maria Walsh, Nina Carberry, Barry Cowan, and Kieran Mullooly.
Yeah, I think it looks certain because, as I say, I don't think, obviously Sinn Féin will transfer to each other, but I don't think Chris McManus got enough first preference votes. And like, I don't think Sinn Féin, like the trend throughout the locals and the Europeans over the last number of days has been, you know, Sinn Féin's vote has dropped, or it hasn't been as high as the opinion poll showed, and they're not as transfer friendly. Pádraig Sabine won't be ruling himself out of the race just yet, but I just think he's too far behind. He's 17,000 votes behind, and then just from experience covering these things, that's a pretty sizable gap, but I don't think I've ever seen a gap like that closed before. Yeah. So, yeah, we're pretty certain that the five people in front are going to take the seats. And but yeah, plenty of talking points. You know, what happened to Sinn Féin, did Fine Gael reform, and did Fianna Fáil get the strategy wrong?
Interesting questions indeed, Barry White. Thank you very much indeed. That's Barry, an old colleague of ours here on Highland Radio. Thanks, Barry. Barry with News Talk Now, of course. It's 17 minutes past 11. Time for a short break. We're back after these. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio with Donal Cavan. We're here for the next 40 minutes or thereabouts. Now, I made a statement earlier on and I invited correction, and I'm glad to say I have been corrected. Pádraig tells us only Irish citizens and British citizens living in Ireland can vote in general elections. Others, refugees, asylum seekers and other nationalities living here can only vote in local government elections. And I'm happy to clarify that. We were speaking earlier to Fergus Cleary, and a caller says best wishes to Fergus. He's a fabulous community man who did so much for everyone, and that's coming in from Mary. And indeed, we were speaking earlier about surgery in Ballykelly and the fact that they are limited in what they can offer in terms of aftercare, and they can't offer any urgent interventions if there are problems, and will refuse to do some surgeries on the basis that they may be dangerous. Caller says, I know a man who went to Ballykelly, but they couldn't do the surgery. He was referred to Belfast and the treatment is free. That might be another option for people. Now, I'm not sure, when you say they were transferred to Belfast, were they transferred to a public or a private hospital? Because the Kingsbridge Hospital Group have a hospital in Ballykelly. Kingsbridge also have a private hospital in Belfast. So what's not clear here is, was the person transferred within the Kingsbridge operation from Kingsbridge Ballykelly to Kingsbridge Belfast? I think they have two hospitals in the vicinity of Belfast, actually. They have a couple anyway in the north of Ireland. So whether that referral was to Kingsbridge in Belfast, or whether that referral was to the Royal Victoria or one of the other acute hospitals, we're not sure of. Now, we were speaking a while back to Barry White about the European elections. Barry, who's on the ground, is calling it that he believes Sinn Féin are going to lose a seat. But I'm joined on the line by Councillor Nicholas Crossan, who was very, very helpful to us here in Highland in Aura on Saturday, and with Michaela in the Carn Dunnock Town Centre on Sunday. Nicholas, good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
And
how
I believe,
you?
Nicholas, you're still Councillor Nicholas Crossan until Thursday week.
Is it Thursday? I thought it was Thursday.
my understanding was the meeting.
Have another week, you do, Donald.
Hang on. The first meeting of the new council is on Friday week, because the first meeting is on the Friday of the rally, which I think is Friday the 21st.
So you have another week.
So you have another week, So you're a councillor until Thursday week. So we will say, and I'll possibly say for the last time, Councillor Nicholas Crossan, you're very welcome. Nicholas did not seek re-election on this occasion. You believe Barry mightn't be correct, Nicholas. You're not ruling out Sinn Féin?
Well, Donald, I'm not ruling out. There's 100,000, and I haven't got the exact details because I was trying to jot them down last night, but there's over 100,000 transfers down below the top six or seven people. That's an awful lot of votes. And I'm saying Michelle Gildenew's on nearly 46,000, Chris McMahon's nearly 30,000. They're, you know, as if McManus Sinn Féin transfers well to Sinn Féin, Michelle Gildern, who could be up around the 70,000 mark, that's going to put her firmly in the picture. You've Niall Blaney on over 30,000 votes. A lot of them, possibly a lot of them, would be Donegal votes, and a lot of them, I'm assuming too, would transfer obviously to Barry Cowan and Chambers.
Yeah.
But I'm sure Sinn Féin, because of the sheer geography, and I'm going back to the geography again, Michelle Gildern and Chris McManus will get that. Depends who is probably eliminated before McManus or Blaney or whoever goes forward. But the geography is going to play a huge part in it. And that throws into question Maria Walsh. Maria Walsh is sitting very pretty on 71,000. But I'm looking down to see where Maria Walsh can get a real heavy lift from. Both Finn Gael are sitting on 74,000 and 71,000. Although there's 100,000 down below, they're green, a lot of independents, and will that transfer to Maria Walsh, who is in Mayo, as Nina Carberry is more central in Kildare, and the Midlands are going to be picking up transfers all over the place. Geography again. Kieran Bellulli on 57,000, sitting in the Midlands, will pick up transfers. So what I'm saying now at the minute is obviously Luke McFlanagan, Cowan, Nina Carberry, Kieran Bellulli. That is four seats that I'm calling at this present minute in time. Don't Niall Tobin, or not Niall Tobin.
Pather
Tobin is in 40,000. I know he's a good bit after that, but he's going to be very transfer friendly. So I think Michelle Gildernew and Maria Walsh could be looking, fighting out, will be fighting out for the last seat. That's in my opinion. Probably throwing in Kieran Mullooly, but I think Kieran will be well up the ladder by that time as well.
You don't believe then the fact that Maria Walsh is an outgoing MEP who would have a presence, would have been a regular contributor to Highland, to other local radio stations, would have a TV profile, would have been known, to many people even before the election and so on and so forth. You don't believe that, because I find myself wondering, will that, the fact that she's an outgoing, the fact that she'll be known, would that not attract some transfers? I mean, what you're suggesting, and I can absolutely see where you're coming from, but you're suggesting very little to Walsh and a lot to Gildernew.
Michelle Gildernew is going to transfer more friendly because you have the independent block down below. You've got probably lefty independence, which is going to transfer more friendly to Sinn Féin than Finn Gael. And I'm going back then to where Maria Walsh, her situation in Mayo, she's out there isolated on her own. Now, I'm certainly not ruling her out, but what I'm going to say is that Luke McFlanagan, Cowan, Carberry, is definitely three. Kieran Mullooly, the day I heard him announced at 6 o'clock on a Friday evening, I could tell you the exact spot. I was going over to Pádraig McGarvey, Councillor Pádraig McGarvey, launch over in Remelton, and I heard it, and I said, there, that's a person. Kieran Mullooly, lovely candidate, great speaker, very familiar with the microphone in front of him. I'm going to give him a seat, and he's going to be there in the mix for the last two seats, Carberry, Kieran Mullooly, and Gildernew. But I wouldn't rule out, I'm not ruling out Sinn Féin at the present moment in time. It's just only purely on mathematics and the geography of the lot.
Yeah. Well, Nicholas, always a pleasure to talk to you, and we will certainly be watching this one with interest. So, Barry was...
It's fabulous. It's great interest. And look, to all the successful candidates in Donegal County Council, new and old, congratulations. The people who lost their seats, look, it's a tough one. And for the people who stepped down, maybe we were the lucky ones, but we didn't have to go through it at the weekend. But I wish everybody well for the future.
Nicholas, thank you very much indeed. That's outgoing Councillor Nicholas Crossan, who is among the bunch that didn't seek re-election this time. So he got to go to Aura and then Cairn on Sunday and spend the weekend enjoying the atmosphere without having the sweat that goes along with it for the candidates. Nicholas, thanks. Good morning. Right. Caller says, listening to you talk about celebrities, I think given that Nina Carberry didn't take part in debates or make an effort to voice her beliefs, I think it shows how shallow a lot of people are. I even heard people say they voted for Maria Walsh because she was the prettiest on the ballot paper. Let's hope they take the job seriously and work hard for this constituency. Now, I think with regards to Maria Walsh, whatever your views on her politics or anything else, she has been a hard-working MEP for the past 5 years. And she has proven herself to be an adept politician. You may not agree with her politics, you may not agree with what she says on occasion, but she has certainly been pushing it and she has certainly been doing the job. Now, as it happens, we are going to be talking about the whole issue of women in politics in just a moment. We're going to take a short break, back in a moment when we'll be having a brief discussion with a representative of the Women for Election Group. Don't go away. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Carter says, I'm interested in your thoughts on the European elections. Is it time we examined just how easy it is to get onto the European ballot with an electorate of over 700,000 people? And yes, indeed, it was a huge ballot paper, 27 names on that paper. Connor says traffic calming measures were a key point of campaigning in the Letterkenny electoral area. I hope that campaign is now followed through. We were discussing the patients in St. Connell's Hospital in Letterkenny with Fergus Cleary. He worked there for many, many decades. Connor says it's very easy to use the wrong words, but instead of calling the patients them, call them ladies and gents, the same as the General Hospital. My sister was a patient often in St. Connell's and a lady always to me. It was lovely to hear Fergus, and that's from Kathleen. And again, we had a comment from Helen who said to us that it was lovely to hear Fergus on the radio, and indeed it was. Now, Helen may be slightly biased because Helen is Fergus's niece, but it was really wonderful to speak to Helen. Now, a couple of comments. Patrick says, our government is set to join an EU surveillance military wing to protect seabed cables. Now, neutrality is up there with housing and immigration for the general election. A caller says, a Highland Radio Live that hasn't got Niall McConnell mentioned. That's a first, says a caller. And Dahi asks the question, what happened to Mary T? The woman fights hard for the hospital in Letterkenny and other issues. Folk still vote in the same useless way. And that's from Dahi. Now, it's an interesting one that that question is raised because I'm joined now on Zoom by a guest. It is Katie Deegan, who is the Communications and External Relations Coordinator with the Women for Election Group. Katie, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well indeed. Thank you. Donegal County Council, Katie, 37 seats, 3 women elected. And nationally, I know the figures haven't been as good as you would hope. From your point of view, striving to get a gender balance in representative politics, still a way to go?
Yeah, unfortunately so. And like, I mean, in particularly, it's disappointing, obviously, to see in Donegal that we're still at 3 women. And that's roughly around somewhere between 8 and 9% of the council that are made up of women councillors. So, you know, that is disappointing. And I think, you know, with the record breaking number of women that we had running this year, we did expect and hope for more women elected. But it looks like we are going to stay around the same of 25 or 26% women across the country.
Now, there were 20 female candidates in Donegal. Now, that's 20 out of 91, in fairness. So it's still just above 20% of the candidacy was women. Now, there's an argument that says the electorate is 50% men, 50% women. So, you know, once 20 names go on ballot sheets, I mean, are women voting for women is the question. Now, I mean, it's not as crude as that. And it would be very crude to say, well, if women voted for women, then everything would change, because it patently women wouldn't. And I'm sure there's men voting for women and there's women voting for men. But it does, you know, in terms of, does the candidate number need to increase? I mean, 20% of the names on the ballots right across the area, is that enough, or do we need to be seeing more?
Yeah, so I think there's 2 points there that I'll just make. So the first is that, you know, more women at decision-making tables makes politics work better for men and women. I think we can all agree that if our chambers nationally and locally reflect the society in which they strive to represent, it can only make for better politics. And I think the vast majority of voters, you know, agree with that. I think a lot of the time when voters go into the ballot box, they don't recognise that there is such a deficit of women. You know, 3 of our party leaders of the main political parties are women. You know, women are, they're so few, but they're working so hard that they're kind of almost shadowing the fact that there are so few women in our local, in our national politics. And then I suppose when it comes to the stagnation of women in local government, despite the record-breaking number of women, I think it demonstrates that we need radical change and we need some, serious measures taken in ahead of the next local election if we want to have a properly representative democracy. And I think, you know, the percentage of women candidates in parties in the local elections ranged from about 25 to 51%. And the political tide for the kind of more popular or the parties with larger amounts of women running, like Sinn Féin and the Green Party, unfortunately didn't return the success that they had hoped in the local elections. And then the larger parties, for example, like Fianna Fáil with 25% women candidates and Fine Gael with only 29% women candidates, despite their electoral success, they didn't have enough women running to deliver a material gain for the overall percentage of women councillors across the country.
Your aim is 40% representation. That's the aim of women for election. There's been a lot of discussion over the years about gender quotas and we need to impose gender quotas and say to parties that X percentage of your candidates need to be women. And then does that get imposed on a national level or on a regional level or on a local level? Do you do it by local authority? Do you do it by constituency? Do you do it by county? There's a lot of discussion to be had, and that would take up a lot of time, one suspects, in Dáil Éireann and in the committee rooms of Leinster House. Are we any closer, do you believe, to the major parties taking that on board and perhaps be prepared to run with legislation that's as detailed as you presumably would want it to be?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, from what we've experienced in the last election cycle is that, you know, political parties worked really constructively with organisations like Women for Election and See Her Elected, and, you know, to make sure that the women that were running were equipped, they felt comfortable, they were ready for the campaign trail. And, you know, the political will and the want for more women in politics, I think, is there across the party spectrum. I think we do need to look at what that legislation could be and what way it'll take shape in local government. But I suppose it's 100% worth doing. And I think, you know, we can't rely on political goodwill to make these strides in gender balance and wait a few more decades, really, to have balance in our councils. And I think, you know, 40% would be the minimum that we would love to see across our, you know, we wouldn't mind a 50 or a 60% women council, you know, and not to get greedy or anything. But I think, you know, I think the political will is definitely there, but we can't rely on that to make it happen without structural change, like things like quotas. You know, the Labour Party in the UK have women only shortlisted for co-options across the country. So, you know, there are things out there internationally that we could examine and look at how it might work within our own structures here in Ireland. And I think it's really important because, one, local democracy is really key anyway. It does really important work. But also because it feeds our national government. Like, there's very few TDs and senators that haven't dabbled in local government in some way, shape or form. And I think that that's really key to our, like, health of our democracy, you know, going forward for, you know, into the general elections and so forward.
Is it a bit reductionist to have this conversation in the first place? And just, I'm going to ask the question, because sometimes I think, I mean, if I'm sitting down to decide who I'm going to vote for, I'm going to look at their policies, I'm going to look at the way they've presented themselves, I'm going to look at, and I wouldn't have a party affiliation, so I'm not going for party A or party B. I will look at each candidate, and I'm going to be honest. I mean, you know, I will say the gender that person happens to be will be quite low down on my, I certainly will not be saying, well, it's a man or it's a woman, and that's going to be a factor in my decision. That's going to come a lot. That's not the most important thing. I think a lot of people perhaps vote in that way, that they don't necessarily say. And then the other part of that is sometimes we speak about women candidates as though women candidates were a homogenous sort of bunch where all women candidates are the same. And the reality is they're not. Even if you look at the three we've had elected in Donegal, Dakota McVenven in one area, she's a young 25-year-old single mother. She's going to be bringing that perspective to council. We have Joy Baird, who's a woman who is living in a defective block-affected house, who is going to be bringing, she's running for the 100% Redress Party, she's going to be bringing that perspective to the council. Yep. Then we have Niamh Kennedy, who's down in Killybegs, and she's an experienced councillor. She's older, shall we say, than Dakota. She's going to be bringing her own perspective. So they're three very different people who happen to be women. And I think it would be reductionist to suggest that they're all going to be the same because they're women, because they're patently not going to be the same. Each is going to bring their own identity. They're going to bring their own personality and they're going to bring their own priorities into that chamber.
Absolutely. And look, I totally agree with you. I think, you know, one of the aspects of Women for Elections work is not only just to inspire and equip women to run for election, but it's women in all of their diversity. We want women from all backgrounds and the political spectrum to run for election because we believe in a variety of voices making for better democracy. And I think, you know, when we were on the lead up and Women for Election were launching their campaign, we didn't ask women solely to just vote for any woman. We said we gathered all the women. We created an interactive map that's available on our website. And we said, go into your LEA, have a look at the women running and choose a woman and have a look and see and ask yourself, you know, is there a man and a woman that have similar policies? And if there are, and you would give them equal kind of support, that you vote the woman higher preference because of that deficit. And I think that that's really key because ultimately it is the voter's decision about who they choose. And I know, like, I don't know, but we In the most recent results, there is very little trend to a lot of transfers. There are some, you know, there's some very unusual ones and twos. Yeah. And I think that that shows that people, when it comes to their local democracy, maybe don't look at parties and they do look at the people and the work that they're doing. But we know that there are hundreds, if not thousands of women doing really amazing work and they're talented and they're capable. They're in their communities, they're in business. And we want to make sure that they are given the equal opportunity to gain their seat.
The caller says, and we did mention this ourselves a moment ago, the elephant in the room around women in public office is the plain fact that women are not voting for women. I'm not sure it's that simple. Another caller says, I agree that more women would help, but are you saying we should vote for a woman because she is a woman? Mary Lou is a good example of being there because she is a woman, not because she is the best person for the job. Not sure where that's coming from, but I think Mary Lou McDonald has been a fairly, fairly effective leader of the opposition, in fairness. I'll tell you something, if I were the judge, I certainly wouldn't want to come up against Three Question Time. Another caller says, and this is an interesting one, because we're speaking about the electorate as though all of the electorate went out to vote last week. Caller says, does more need to be done to attract more of the electorate to come out and vote? 50% is a dire indictment. 50% of people bother to vote, but if things go wrong, 100% of the people will crib. And that's a fair point. I mean, you know, as many voters didn't vote as did. And maybe the question needs to be asked, you know, if those 50% that didn't vote were to come out, how much of a difference would that make and what could be done to persuade them?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we definitely need to have a look at our structures from education to civil society groups and all of these people that play a part in our politics and how it's shaped here in Ireland, to encourage people, one, to go and vote. But I also think that there's a real key in kind of explaining to people in plain language what it is to vote, what it means for their community, the work that a councillor does, because there can be a lot of misconceptions about what kind of responsibilities a councillor might have versus a TD or a senator. And I think that all of that education is really, really important because people don't want to go into the ballot box if they don't feel informed. People feel intimidated by the fact that there's, you know, a big long list of people that they might not recognise or they might not know what they stand for and the fear of making the wrong choice. So I think as a society, we probably need to have a look at how we're educating people, one, about politics and two, how we encourage people to actually go and vote, because we definitely need a lot more active engagement with our government structures.
So from your point of view, a lot done, but a lot more to do?
Correct.
Katie Deegan, Communications and External Relations Coordinator with Women for Election. Katie, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
No doubt, thanks for having me.
And no doubt we'll be having conversations as we get closer to a general election, which mightn't be too far away.
Happy to.
Okay, no, Katie, thank you very much indeed. That's Katie Deegan there from the group Women for Election. Now, let's look at some of your comments before we go for a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be discussing Lifford Hospital. Now, let's see what some of our callers and correspondents are saying. Earlier, by the way, I suggested that what happened over the course of the past few days, particularly in Letterkenny, was democracy in action. A caller says, big ticket issues, housing, immigration, now neutrality for sale, and the establishment topped the local council seats. What democracy? It was more about stopping the rise of Sinn Féin, so says one of our callers. Caller says, can you ask a 100% redress councillor, will they support the council tenants who live in council defective block houses? Because so far neither the council nor councillors will tell the tenants what's happening, if the housing can be replaced or whatever. My understanding of the 100% redress party is very, very simple. They support the People's Document, and the People's Document says every building affected by defective blocks needs to be remediated and redressed. My understanding of the People's Document is that local authority homes are a vital part of that, and the People's Document says, yes, local authority homes should be done as quickly as possible, just like every other. Caller says, so far this week, I've met three e-scooters on the pavement. This is breaking the law. Are the Gardaí not patrolling the problem? Another caller says, the only non-Irish allowed to vote here should be EU members, residential UK citizens, and those who have obtained citizenship. The 1960s legislation is outdated, as anyone arriving within a week can vote. That is daft. Caller says, my husband had a knee replacement in Ballykelly 10 years ago. We had VHI cover a day or two before he had x-rays. We were charged £600 extra. Was this right? Because this was an outpatient for the x-rays, he was charged. Caller says, English people can no longer vote here due to Brexit. I presume that's in European elections. Caller says, how many distilleries are sustainable in Donegal? Promoting alcohol tourism is hardly good for the county. Now, it goes back to the conversation we had with James at the Slieve League Distillery in Ardrath earlier in the show. The Irish Distillers Association are having a conference in Ardrath on Thursday of this week, and we have the Slieve League Distillery, we have the Crawley Distillery, a new one developing as well in Carrigart. Caller asks, is there anyone who does a test for air quality on a dwelling house? Mark asks the question. You might let us know if there's anyone out there that does air quality testing in dwelling houses. And a caller says, the Spanish government is to start screening children for smartphone addiction and will have treatment centres. Is this too far? Now, the full story, as we understand it, is the Spanish government is going to start screening children for smartphone addiction. It's part of a new plan to improve online safety that will see the establishment of centres to treat mobile dependency. It's led to calls for similar measures to be introduced here. Right, it's 13 minutes to 12. We're going to be having a discussion about Livert Hospital and its future after this short break. We got a statement in from the HSE. And before we do that, though, I just want to go to one more comment before we do that, and we'll just clear that. Because we were speaking earlier about the eligibility for voting, your presenter mentioned that only Irish citizens and British citizens living in Ireland can vote in general elections. Would you please let those people know, perhaps born in the UK but holding an Irish passport, that they can apply to have their status changed by contacting Donegal County Council with their passport details? That's from Anne-Marie. Thank you, Anne-Marie. And a caller says, celebrity candidates make bad politics, in my opinion. It beggars belief how Nina Carberry got such a huge vote. I've only seen her from her party promoting her online. High-powered marketing but no substance. Well, if Nina Carberry is elected to Europe, then we will see how that pans out, and we can then make assessments based on her political performance in the European Parliament. And we'll see what happens after she gets elected. Now, HSE sent us a statement today. HSE wishes to advise that the dental clinic at Clifford Hospital will remain closed, with all patients being asked to attend the dental department at St Connell's Hospital in Letterkenny, where dental services to Clifford patients will continue uninterrupted. For dental appointments, or if patients are in pain or a dental emergency, please contact the dental departments in St Connell's Hospital on 07491 23562. That's 23562, the dental department at St Connell's Hospital. And the HSC wishes to apologise to patients for any inconvenience caused. Now, John Quinn is the chair of the Friends of Livert Hospital, and he joins us on the line. John, we've had discussions before about Livert Hospital and how a service is removed ostensibly for repairs and then it doesn't come back. You fear that's what's going to happen here?
Well, the fear's always there, but the understanding, we had a few phone calls this morning that the reason they're moving to St Connell's is they're carrying out repairs in Lifford, and as soon as the repairs in Lifford Old Hospital are completed, that the dental service will be coming back. That's the understanding and the commitment that I've received this morning from a few phone calls. So we have to take the HSE at the words. The reason they moved it is there is repairs being done in Lifford, but the HSE need to come out more public and tell the public exactly what's going on, because us keeping people in the dark starts rumour mongering, and we don't want that. I mean, it's not right to expect children in the Fun Valley area to travel for dental treatment to St Connell's permanently, you know, when you had the facility in Lifford, and it was a very good facility. So the understanding is, Donal, that they've moved it to St Connell's temporarily. Now, how temporary it's going to be, I don't know, but they intend to move it back when the repairs are done, and we have to take their word at, you know, we have to check them at that, you know.
Now, we know that there is a long-term plan to develop the Lifford Common area. I'm sure you're keeping a very close eye on that one yourself as well.
Yeah.
And Lifford Common, there's going to be residential development, there's going to be retail, there's going to be industrial, and there is going to be a new, effectively a new Lifford Hospital, and that the existing hospital buildings will be used for things like day services in the dental area and others. Now, obviously, that's going to take a couple of years to fully realise. Are you confident that that will happen, and that you will in the future see a new reorganisation of health services in Lifford with that new complex on Lifford Common being at its epicentre?
Oh, definitely. Now, just to give an insight into what happened, we had a meeting with the HSE, Mr. Monon and Mr. Morrison, just shortly after COVID in the county house in Lifford, and it was going to be a fiery meeting because we were frustrated at the speed. And Mr. Monon sprung one on us that stunned us, and then what he said was, we're in the process of, we have agreed to build a new 25-bed unit on a greenfield site in Lifford with all the facilities, including primary care, to be all on site, plus 171 or 72 car park spaces. And we were sitting across the table from them, and we were totally, absolutely godsmacked because we weren't expecting it. And we asked him to repeat that.
Mm-hmm.
And he did repeat it. And there was another guy there that we never met before who was in charge of the estates for the HSE in our area, and Mr. Finn, and he says, yes, that's what we intend to do. So that's going to go ahead. The latest on that is that the HSE have got the funding for the new build in the Greenfield site. And also the county council are on board now to provide the site. It's at phase two.
Yeah, they're in the process of, as I understand it, they're about to start developing roads and develop access and develop some basic infrastructure around that whole area, and that work is ongoing.
The Lifford Hospital, new hospital, will be built in Lifford now.
Yeah.
Of course, we have to be patient, and having said that, we've been very patient, not just the committee that's in situ now, but the committees down through the last 20-odd years. There was a couple of times that we had meetings, say, 4 or 5 years ago, and we were sitting around the table wondering, what in the name of God are we coming here for? Why do we keep coming? We keep coming. And I said, listen, we're a thorn in the side. Let's keep doing it. Let's persevere. All it's costing us is an hour out of our time every month. And at the end of the day, I do believe at the end of the day, if we keep going, we'll get what we're trying to achieve. And we have. We've got it. We've got the commitment. We've got the commitment from the HSE and the council. The site's there, the money's there, and it's just now crossing the T's and dotting the I's. It will take a couple of years, yes. Now, I think the design that they're looking at, I could be corrected on this, is a community hospital that was built in Ballinamore, South Leitrim. I went down on a few days at the weekend, and we had a look at it. And if we can get what's there, I'm telling you, the people will be delighted. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely stunning what they have down there. And I think that's what they're basing it on. So it is going to go ahead. It's going to be slow.
Yep.
But we're going to make sure that our committee, we had our AGM not so long ago. We're going to keep going, and we're going to keep fighting. Somebody asked us at the time, Donald, when we got this news, is that it? Is the Lifford Hospital Committee going to stop? And we says, no. We have to keep going until the sod cut and the first block's laid, and then whoever's there at that time will.
And of course, the other thing you're going to be doing is keeping an eye on the existing Lifford Hospital building and seeking as quickly as possible the return of services like that dental service we've been discussing this morning.
Yeah, well, there was rumours going around what was going to happen to the building, to the old building, but the HSE gave a commitment again, and that's commitments. they've given a commitment that that's staying in the hands of the HSE. They have other plans for that, i.e. administration or the services, until the new hospital is up and running. And that'll be another battle for somebody else after the new hospital opens up, what to do with that. But they intend to keep it in the HSE, keep it on, you know, their property.
John, time has beaten us, I'm afraid, but your point certainly taken on board with regards to those dental services, and we'll be keeping a close eye on the situation, as no doubt you and your colleagues in the Friends of Lifford Hospital will as well.
Well, I'd like,
the moment,
like before you go, Donald, I'd like to actually pay tribute to our committee and our outgoing committee, because it's only for them, it's only for them that we're at the situation we're at now. Yeah. So what I'm saying is community pressure does count.
John Quinn, thank you very much indeed. That's John there speaking to us from Lifford. That's the end of the 9 till noon show for this Tuesday morning. Thank you to all our contributors. Thank you to all our staff here. Thanks especially to Shannon and to Caroline, who produced and held my hand as always. I'm back in the hot seat again tomorrow. Most importantly, thanks to all of you for listening. John Breslin's up next around the Northwest, but for myself, Donald Kavanagh, have a very good day.